Marriage Today presents Flying High in Marriage by Jimmy Evans.
So this session is called Flying High in Marriage, and I want to start just by saying Karen and I have been working through an issue for the last couple of years in our marriage. I think we're ready to talk about it now, and it's kind of, you know, hard to talk about. But a couple of years ago, Karen started accusing me of something. It's kind of hard to talk about. But one morning, I was walking through the bedroom, and Karen said, you pulled the covers last night. She accused me of being a cover puller. And 40 years of marriage, never happened before. I walked through the bedroom. She's making the bed. She said, you pulled the covers last night. And I said, no, I didn't. She said, yeah, you did. And I said, no, Karen, I did not pull the covers. I do not pull the covers. There's nothing worse than a cover puller. There's like thieves, murderers, terrorists, and cover pullers. And I'm not a cover puller. She said, yeah, you are a cover puller. You pull the covers a lot. I said, no, I don't. So I was, you know, kind of put out with that. And so I went, I was staying in a hotel, I was speaking somewhere, and I was by myself. So I woke up the next morning after, you know, when I was about to check out of my room, and I was walking through and I looked at the bed and I noticed that I had pulled all the covers to my side. And for just a nanosecond, I thought Karen might be right. But then I realized if you're sleeping by yourself, it's not cover pulling. It's just using all the available covers, right? Okay, and so, by the way, I have a basic life principle that I'm not responsible for what I do when I'm unconscious. How many men agree with that? Only confront me for what I do when I'm conscious. If I'm unconscious, I don't want you talking to me about it. Anyway, so I thought maybe Karen was right, but then I realized not. So I go home, and so October of last year, we had the worst night that we've ever had together. It was just cover wars all night long, and Karen was pulling the covers, horribly pulling the covers all night long. And about the middle of the night, I'm starting to get cold. I realize the covers are off the bed. All I've got is just one cover left, and the main cover's been pulled off the bed. And I'm just thinking, what is wrong with her? She is trying to accuse me of pulling the covers when, in fact, she's the cover puller in the family. She's trying to blame me, but she pulled the covers. So I get out of bed the next morning, and I step out of bed, and I step on something. And I realize it's the blanket. It's on my side of the bed. And at first, I think I pulled the covers completely off the bed last night. And that's what was happening. But then I realized Karen pulled them off, and she came over and planted it on my side. So later, all the guys understand this. So I stepped out of bed, and the covers were on my side. Okay. So I'm walking through the bedroom later in the morning, and Karen is standing next to the covers, like she's been waiting there for me to walk through. And I walked through, and she said, see what you did last night? And I said, yeah. And I walked through. Well, that's kind of the day that I realized I had a problem. And I could see myself sitting in a group saying, hi, I'm Jimmy, and I'm a cover puller. Everybody says, hi, Jimmy. And, you know, I couldn't believe it, first of all. I couldn't believe that I pulled the covers all the way off the bed. And so I told Karen, and she also accused me of snoring, and about the same time, and I said, I don't snore. Then the neighbors called and asked why we were mowing the yard at night. And I said, we're unconscious, leave us alone. But she said, you snore and you pull the covers and all that. And so I said to Karen, you know, and we're 61 years old, I said, why don't I start sleeping upstairs? And I said, maybe you would sleep a lot better if I wasn't snoring and pulling the covers and things like that. And she said, no, I want you sleeping with me. And I said, well, Karen, you know, you'd get a whole lot better sleep if I wasn't sleeping with you because I'm unconscious. I don't know how to stop this stuff. And so she said, no, you're sleeping with me. So I stopped pulling the covers. Well, actually, I backslide every now and then, but I'm pretty getting better. But this is not about cover pulling. It's about a dynamic in marriage that happens once we've been married for a while. Man, just about everybody goes through this dynamic, but it's a very dangerous dynamic. And that's where I was. Karen had been saying to me for a couple of years that, you know, that I was pulling the covers. And my response to that was, no, I'm not. I didn't. And she would say to me, I couldn't sleep last night because you were pulling the covers or you were snoring or whatever. Well, I stopped pulling the covers. As soon as she said that about me sleeping with her, what I realized was I didn't care. I was not caring about how she slept. I was not caring about her experience sleeping. All I was caring about was myself. And here's the dynamic that happens in marriage. Once we get comfortable with the relationship, we begin to focus on other things and we put the relationship on autopilot. And that's when everything bad happens in marriage is when we hit autopilot. In dating, the thing about dating and when you're newly married is you're highly focused on your spouse, and everything that happens to them is very important to you. You want them to enjoy you. You want them to enjoy what you say and what you do. You're highly focused. You're very proactive in pleasing each other. But the longer you stay married, there is the process that we go through that we hit autopilot. We begin to take each other for granted. And then our spouse begins to complain about stuff, and it actually annoys us. Whereas before we wanted to hear it, and before we were very receptive to what they were saying, now we become insensitive to it. Well, I'm going to talk about flying. I'm a pilot, and I fly a plane, a little plane. I just fly a single-engine plane, but I'm a pilot. And I want to talk about autopilot. Now, this would surprise some people to know, but a lot of pilots don't know how to fly very well because of autopilot. One of my friends runs a charter service, a flying charter service, and he hired a commercial pilot to fly for him, like, you know, twin-engine props and King Airs and things like that. And this pilot of about 30 years went to work for him, and my friend hired him immediately when he knew that he was a commercial pilot and had all these, you know, 15,000 hours flying. And the guy, when he took the job, this pilot said, well, I'm going to have to brush up on my skills because it's been a while since I've flown. And my friend said, what do you mean it's been a while since you've flown? You're a commercial pilot. He said, the plane that I fly, I drive to the runway, push a button, it takes itself off, flies all the way there, lands itself, and I park it back at the gate. Flying has become so sophisticated that some of the crashes that you're hearing about are actually the autopilot disengaging, and the pilots don't have the skills to fly the plane without that autopilot. And so my plane has autopilot. There's a little button right on the dash that once I take off, I can pre-program the autopilot. I take off, I get up in the air, and I can hit autopilot. It'll fly me all the way to the runway. Now, my plane won't land itself, but I can fly it all the way to the runway, click off of autopilot, and land the plane. But the more you use autopilot, the more you lose the skills of flying. And more, what my friends and I, what we do is we hand fly up to altitude. We hand fly for a long time, and then we hand fly down. When you're on autopilot, first of all, you lose skills. Secondly is you become distracted. When I'm flying my plane, and my plane is a little Cirrus. It's a little single-engine Cirrus, and I have a side yoke. I fly like this. And so when I'm flying my plane by hand, I am extremely sensitive to the entire aircraft and what's going on. I'm flying it. And if I just barely pull my yoke over, that plane's going to turn this way. If I barely push it forward, it's going to go nose down. Whatever I'm doing with my feet, with my hands, I'm totally in control of that plane, and I'm very, very sensitive to it. The minute I hit autopilot, here's the way I fly. Looking down at the ground. You know, I'm still engaged with my instruments and everything here. We listen to XM radio. We'll listen to golf or listen to football or listen to something like that. We'll listen to the radio. But as soon as we hit autopilot, we are not sensitive to the airplane any longer because we know that autopilot's flying the plane. But ultimately, you become unconscious. There are pilots that hit autopilot and go to sleep. There have been commercial pilots that have overflown their destination because they got up in the air, they hit autopilot, and they actually went to sleep. Here's what happens in marriage. The minute you hit autopilot, you begin to lose the skills of relationship. Now listen, there are couples that have been married for 1 year that have better relationship skills than couples have been married for 40 years. You've been on autopilot for so long, maybe not completely in the relationship. Karen and I, when Karen was complaining to me about, you know, pulling covers and things like that, I mean, we were on autopilot in our relationship, but I was in that area of our relationship. And it worried me. When Karen said that and I realized how bad I'd been pulling the covers, I just thought, you know, I really am checked out in that area, and I hope there are other areas that I'm not checked out also. But you lose the skills. As soon as you put your relationship on autopilot, you actually begin to lose the skills of relationship, and you begin to lose awareness of your spouse and what's going on in their life. And ultimately, you just become, like I said, don't confront me on what I'm doing when I'm unconscious. We shouldn't be unconscious in marriage. For example, when I wake up at night now, I told Karen, I said, you know, Karen, I can't do anything about cover pulling. There's two things I can do about cover pulling. Okay, you're semi-conscious, you know, when you're rolling over at night. So the first thing I do is I roll toward her, not away from her. When I'm rolling over at night and when I roll away from Karen, I push the covers her way. Okay, before, for 2 years, I kept saying, I'm not pulling the covers. I'm not a cover puller. Now, I'm highly sensitive when I'm in bed of what's happening to Karen all night long, which before I wasn't. That's what I'm talking about. You've got to click off. I've got two buttons in my plane. I've got a button right here that says AP. That's autopilot. I've got a button on my yoke that's a red button that says AP, and that's how you click off autopilot. I want everybody clicking off autopilot tonight. If you've been in any area of your relationship, you're losing, if you're on autopilot in any area, you're losing the skills of relating and you're losing awareness of each other, and it's a dangerous, dangerous thing to do. So the question is, why do you ever hit autopilot in the first place? Well, the first is, you think once you've reached altitude that you can just coast on in. In other words, we worked to date, we worked to get married, you know, we're doing great, and so we can hit autopilot, and now we can just coast on in. Well, here's what you need to understand. Planes run out of gas. My plane has 4 hours of fuel. That autopilot's dandy until you run out of gas. And the best plane in the world without gas is going to crash. And so your marriage cannot make it without fueling, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. The other reason that we hit autopilot is we want to focus on something else. And so we focused on each other and we fell in love and we married, but now I want to focus on my career, or we want to focus on the kids, or we want to focus on something else. Listen, the instant you hit autopilot and your focus turns somewhere else, your marriage is in danger. You cannot, your main focus, like I said, we have the instrument panel in front of us. When I hit autopilot and I'm flying, I look out the window for a minute and I do my scan of the instruments. A knowledge of what is happening at the instruments has to be the number one thing that I'm doing when I'm flying. Listen, in marriage, yes, we have careers, yes, we have children, yes, we have other things, but our spouse has got to be the main focus of our lives. Except for Jesus Christ, we have to keep our... If you're saying, we've got other things to do and I've got to focus on something else, it's the beginning of the end. The minute you hit that autopilot and you begin to put your focus somewhere else, bad things happen. The other reason that we do it is that's how we were trained to fly. You say, well, Jimmy, isn't that normal? Well, let me say, if your parents or whoever trained you in marriage, if your parents were on autopilot, they either flew very low or they crashed. This message is called Flying High in Marriage. I want you to get to a high altitude, and I want you to stay there for the rest of your marriage. And I want you to hand fly the airplane. I never, ever want you for the rest of your married life to ever hit autopilot. And if you're on it right now, I want you to click off. If you hit this button, I want you to click off with this button right here. And we're going to hand fly it in. Here's the truth about the flight of marriage. Number one, no marriage can fly itself. It requires human input. You've got to have two human beings working at the marriage for the marriage to work. Number two is marriage is a two-pilot plane. My plane is a one-pilot plane. But the best planes are two-pilot planes. You have to have two people in the cockpit to fly that plane, okay? Marriage is a two-pilot plane. Don't make your spouse fly the plane by themselves. They can't. Marriage requires the input of two people. The other thing is flying the plane is the most important thing you can do if you value the other lives on board. Listen, if your plane goes down, your children are going to get hurt. If your plane goes down, other people are going to be hurt. Imagine for just a minute that you get on a commercial flight and it's a big plane, it's a two-pilot plane, and you see both the pilots in there. Maybe it's a man and a woman. You get on the plane, you're boarding, you see this male and female pilots in there, and you're thinking, that's great. And the plane takes off, there's a couple hundred people on board, and after about 20 or 30 minutes of the plane being up in the air, both pilots walk out the door and just come out and start visiting with everybody. And they're just having the biggest time, they're just visiting with everybody, and that's okay for 5 or 10 minutes. You're thinking, oh, y'all, okay, well, they got all pilot on this plane. But they leave the door open, you can see there's nobody up there. And then 30 minutes goes by, and an hour goes by, and 2 hours goes by, and you're thinking, hey, you people need to get up in that cockpit up there. When you're not tending to your marriage, that's how your children feel. Your children need mom and dad up in the cockpit flying that plane. It's a two-pilot plane. And if it goes down, those children are going to get hurt. And so the very best thing that we can do for our family is to work on our marriage. So I want to talk about how to keep your marriage flying high. I'm going to give you a little flying lesson here, okay? And this is what they teach you when you're taking flying lessons. Number one, believe that you could crash. When you're taking pilot's lessons in the classroom part of it, they talk to you about feelings of invincibility. And they say, if you believe that you're bulletproof and 10 feet tall and you're not going to crash, you're the guy that's going to crash. Because pilots need to be sober-minded people. And they need to understand it could happen to me. Now, when Karen and I started our marriage ministry over 20 years ago, there was a couple, a wonderful couple, and they had a wonderful marriage ministry. And they went all over the world ministering to marriages, and they registered the success of their ministry by how many divorces were canceled. tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of divorces were canceled, or were canceled. And they were on our program. We interviewed them, and then they divorced. This powerful marriage ministry, and in the letter, he ran off with some gal. And in the letter that he wrote explaining the failure of their marriage, he said, I didn't listen to my own teaching. Karen and I could crash. We're not invincible, and we understand that. And when you understand that you're not invincible, you work on your marriage. The second way that you keep flying high in your marriage is learn the laws of aerodynamics and respect them. There are laws of aerodynamics. I don't fear flying. The more you learn about flying, flying's the safest. Listen, flying is the safest method of transportation, right? Okay? Marriage is the safest relationship on earth. Did you know that with all of its warts, marriage is the safest relationship on earth? And did you know that the way that God designed it, you have a 100% chance of success in marriage? Did you know that? Marriage is the safest relationship on earth when you do it God's way. Well, you know, people, I was on a plane one day, and there was three gals across the aisle from me over here. And this one gal that was closest to me was terrified of flying. She was throwing up in the air sick bag while we were at the gate. She had her mouth on that air. I felt so sorry for her. Well, you know, air is a liquid. When you fan yourself, you know, a lot of people think you're up in the air in a 747 and that plane is up in the middle of nothing. Air is a very heavy liquid. And that's why a 747 with hundreds of passengers and all their luggage on board, when you see a ship in the ocean, you don't worry about it because you can see the water. Well, oxygen is just like water. It's just a very heavy liquid. When you break a law of aerodynamics, you're going down. You're going to get hurt real bad or you're going down. God created four laws for marriage. These are laws. In Genesis chapter 2, when God created Adam and Eve and the institution of marriage, here's what God said. The first words ever spoken after marriage was created. For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother, shall cleave unto his wife. The man and his wife were both naked and unashamed. Those are the four foundational laws of marriage. Those are laws. Those are not principles. Now listen, God said, for this cause a man will leave his father and mother. Well, how do we know that God wasn't just saying that to Adam and Eve? How do we know that God was also saying that to us? Because Adam and Eve didn't have a mother. God directly created Adam and Eve. They were the only people ever created that didn't have a belly button. So God says, for this cause, a man is going to leave his father and his mother and cleave unto his wife, and they two shall become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked and not ashamed. Well, here are the four laws of marriage. Number one, marriage has to be first. Now listen to me. When you break a law, you're going to get hurt. Marriage operates within God's laws. Karen and I violated every law of marriage when we first got married, and we were on the brink of divorce. And so when you understand the laws of marriage and you understand it doesn't matter how intelligent you are, how rich you are, how talented you are, no one is the exception. Gravity doesn't care who you are. It will drag you down and kill you. It doesn't care who you are. It's an impersonal thing. The laws of marriage will help anyone succeed, or if you violate them, anyone will fail. Okay, number one law, marriage has to be first. For this cause, a man will leave his father and mother. The most important relationship that you had before you got married now has to be reprioritized in real terms. Okay, so here's what I'm saying. If your job comes before your marriage is at risk. If your children come before your marriage is at risk. If any friendship you have comes before your marriage is at risk. Let me say, that's just true. But here's the special challenge that our generation has. It's called electronics. Listen to what happened in this room. I don't know if it happened in other places, the rumble. So people say all the time, my spouse is sitting across the room from me, but they're not with me. They're on their phone. They're texting. We're not connecting. One statistic I read said that one third of all affairs begin on Facebook. And one half of divorce petitions have the word Facebook on them. Okay. So I'm saying, if I said to you, here, I would like to hand you this, and it's probably going to help you a whole lot have an affair or get divorced, would you accept that? And I'm not saying anything bad about Facebook. I'm saying you need a technology-free zone in your home where you are together and no one else is there with you. And if you can't shut your phone off or shut your computer down, it means it's in control of you. You're not in control of it. Technology is a wonderful servant. It's a terrible master. And technology is destroying marriages. It's keeping us from connected. If you're sitting in the same room, you're both on the computer talking to somebody else, you're not with each other. Karen and I used to come home. I would come home. We would eat together as a family. We would put our children to bed. We taught them to respect our marriage. They knew that they had a certain time, up to a certain time of night was their time. And then we put them to bed, and then it was our time. And we went into the bedroom, and we had a little area, a little sitting area. When we went into the bedroom, we popped popcorn, and we, without television, without anyone or anything, distracting us, we would sit and talk face-to-face for an hour or two. And I look back on that as some of the most important time in our marriage, connecting every single day. But I hear people right now telling me all the time, we just don't have any connection. You know, but they're texting, they're emailing, they're on the telephone. There's the constant intrusion there. The number one law of marriage is your marriage has to be first in real terms. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter how busy you are. Doesn't matter how talented you are. Doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter. No one is the exception. Your marriage has to be number one. Number two law of marriage is the law of pursuit. For this cause, a man will leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife. And the word cleave there means like to run up a mountain. It is a very energetic word. Marriage is work. It only works when you work at it. And so marriage has to be first, but number two, you have to work at it. There has never been a marriage ever that you didn't have to work at. And the soulmate myth is this. The soulmate myth says, if I marry the right person, I won't have to work at the relationship. We're just going to always be in love and always feel good. That is an absolute myth, and it's a lie. If you marry your perfect soulmate, if you marry the perfect person, you're going to have to work hard for the rest of your life at that relationship. Marriage is work, and it only works. Some people think there's something wrong if I have to work at my marriage. There's nothing wrong if you have to work at your marriage. That's just the way that God created it. But that's the second law of marriage. The third law of marriage is the law of possession. They too shall become one. No one can dominate the relationship. No one can control the money, and the other person doesn't have input into the money. You can't control the children. You can't control the home without your spouse's input. Men and women are complete equals, and marriage is two people as a team running the home and everything in the home. They too shall become one. Everything I have belongs to you, even children from a previous marriage. I'm giving them to you. Everything you have, I take responsibility for, the assets and the liabilities, and every single thing we do, we will do together as a team. We didn't get married to live two separate lives. We got married to share our lives together, and we're going to run this thing together as a team. That is a law of marriage. That's a law. The fourth law is the law of purity. It says that they were naked without any shame. Well, they were naked without shame until sin came into the garden. And then when sin came into the garden, they began to hide themselves behind fig leaves. Because when purity was in the garden, they could have intimacy without any fear or shame whatsoever. But when they sinned, remember, when God came to Adam and said, "What is this that you've done?" Adam said, "You gave me a defective woman. You know, there's something wrong with that chick." And he wasn't just accusing Eve, he was accusing God. Okay? And then he went to Eve, and Eve said, "Well, the devil made me do it." But the point is this, they couldn't trust each other any longer. I wounded Karen with my words. I was a verbal bully. I never took responsibility for my behavior, or never said I was wrong or sorry. And my wife, we had no intimacy whatsoever because she couldn't trust me, and I shouldn't have been trusted. But the night that I came into the bedroom, we were on the brink of divorce. I told Karen to get out of the house. I walked in the room, and I said, "Please forgive me. I'm wrong. I'm going to hang up my golf clubs," because that was my priority. I worked at playing golf. I played golf all the time. Our marriage wasn't a priority. And for the first time in our married life, I apologized to my wife. And from that night forward, I began to take responsibility for my behavior and to say I was sorry. And the fig leaves began to drop off. We began to share things again, trust each other again, and we regained the intimacy in our marriage. Listen to me. Listen to me. I have absolutely no fear of flying whatsoever. If I'm on a commercial flight, that's where I sleep. My best sleeping is on an airplane. I never think about crashing because I know how safe it is because I understand the laws of aerodynamics. I don't fear divorcing. I know I could if I don't pay attention. Marriage is the safest relationship on earth because it is suspended upon the laws of God, which are 100% dependable. You are not the exception, and I am not the exception. We could fail. but we don't have to fail because marriage is a very stable relationship that is suspended upon the absolute laws of God. It has to be first. I have to work at it. We have to share everything together, and we have to take responsibility for our behavior. All of us can do that. All of us can do that. It may be making some changes, but all of us can do that, okay? Number one, believe you could crash. Number two, learn the laws of aerodynamics or marriage dynamics. Number three, refuel the plane regularly and time your fuel. Now, here's a tip for pilots. You never trust the fuel gauge on an airplane because it only has to be wrong one time. How much gas we got? Oh, well, we got a half tank. Well, what if it's wrong? So as a pilot, you look to see, you look down into the wing and you look to see how much fuel you have. On my plane, we have 4 hours, 4 hours of fuel. And if we have a headwind, we have less than that. So we have 4 hours of fuel. And here's the thing. When you land, you want 30 minutes of fuel in the tanks, at least 30 minutes of fuel. You never land saying, how much fuel we got? We got 2 minutes. You don't do that. Okay. So we check it and we time it. Okay. What am I saying? So here's three types of fuel that you need to run your marriage. Number one is God fuel. You need to wake up every morning, get in the presence of God, because the Holy Spirit gives you the power to love each other. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. That's the personality of God, and He'll give it to you for free every time you ask for it. And the more dependent you are upon the Holy Spirit, the better spouse you're going to be. And when Karen and I wake up in the mornings, we get on each side, both of us have our side of the house where we have our quiet time. We take our fears, our hurts, our temptations, our needs to God. We ask Him to touch us and heal us, and we ask Him to fill us with His Holy Spirit. Then we're ready to love each other. We need God fuel. It's the most important issue in marriage is our personal relationship with Jesus Christ. But see, the fruit of the Spirit is love. You understand, when God tells us to love each other, we don't have that ability without the Holy Spirit. It's not innate within us, okay? Number one, God fuel. So we need that. So let me talk about timing it. I've been a Christian for 42 years. I got saved a week before Karen and I got married, so I know how long I've been a believer, okay? If I go 2 or 3 days without praying and being with the Lord, it changes my personality. Anybody agree with what I'm saying? So I'm going to time that thing. And what I'm saying is I need to be with Jesus every day, and sometimes a couple of times a day. Okay? So I've got to time that. Number two is spouse fuel, the second type of fuel that we have. Meeting each other's needs and having fun. Very important to have fun together in marriage. Without sex and fun, marriage is a business relationship, and it's a rotten business relationship. You need to have sex and fun in marriage and meet each other's needs, and it's like fuel. Early in our marriage, Karen and I always had on our calendar a time. First of all, we had a weekly date night, a time to be together. We had time that we talked every single day, but always on our calendar, we 4 or 5 weeks at the max away, we would put our kids with my mom and dad. We were broke. We didn't have any money. So we literally would go 30 miles away and stay at the crummiest motel you've ever seen in your entire life. It's all we could afford. But we would literally go to the grocery store, walk into the motel room, lock the door, and stay there for 24 to 48 hours. And when we walked out, we were full of fuel. And we timed it. I did. So, you have to meet each other's needs, and you need to have fun in your marriage, and you have to time it. You can't go 3 or 4 weeks without being together. Every day, you need to have meaningful time together of connecting. But 2 or 3 times a week, you need to have special times together in goodwill, in the sense, and I ask Karen, I say to Karen, I say, are you okay? Well, she knows what that means. Is there anything I need to change to make you happy or to do what I need to do as a husband? I want to know the answer to that question. Are you okay? You need to be able to ask your spouse that and not be defensive about it. You both need to answer that question, yes. Number three kind of fuel is friend fuel. We need good friends in our lives that, that give to us and that we enjoy, and that we enjoy being with. Church is critical in the days that we live in. All of Karen and I's best friends we met in church. It's critical in the days we live in. Well, let me say this. Children burn fuel. I didn't mean that to be a joke, but it's a pretty good one, isn't it? Really. Work burns fuel, right? And some people burn fuel. Problems burn fuel. But some people aren't givers, some people burn fuel, okay? So here's what happened in marriage. We love each other, we get married, everything is great. We get up to altitude and we just think, isn't this fantastic? We met, we married, everything's going great. But we have some other things going on, so we had autopilot. We began to burn fuel. And then when we're burning fuel and we're not taking on fuel, God fuel, spouse fuel, friend fuel, then we get together and we don't have the resources to meet each other's needs. And we're tired and we're distracted. And we're frustrated because we're just not meeting each other's needs. And then you wake up one day and you hear these words. I don't think I love you anymore. I don't know that I ever loved you. Because you can't remember having fuel on board. And that's when the marriage goes nose down. And every bad thing begins to happen. Okay, you've got to fuel that plane. How can you be a responsible pilot? I'm about to pronounce you co-pilots here in just a minute. You listen to me what I'm saying now. By the authority invested in me, I'm just about to pronounce you co-pilots. You keep fuel on your plane. That's your responsibility as a pilot. You fuel that plane and you time that fuel. You have to be with God regularly. You have to be with each other regularly. You need to be in Christian fellowship regularly with people who are filling your tanks. And you need to keep enough fuel on board that you have more than enough fuel. And then you're not running on fumes. Because your marriage needs that, and everyone depending on your marriage needs that. Here's the next tip. Don't overload the plane. Okay. If you've ever heard this saying, you're watching the news and you hear this, the plane crashed shortly after takeoff. 90% of the time, that's because the plane was overloaded. Every plane has a center of gravity. And when you overload a plane, especially the back end of a plane, either the plane won't take off, you can't get altitude, and you crash. Or if you do take off, you can't fly the plane. The plane is unmanageable. It's very difficult to land. So you have to keep your weight and balance the way it needs to be. Here's the issue of stress. Stress robs the joy of life. The stress of debt robs the joy of possessing. I don't believe all debt is wrong, but I believe if you have too much debt, it doesn't matter what you have, you're not going to enjoy it. If you have a house that's too expensive, if you have cars and all the stuff that's too expensive, it just robs the joy of life and of possessing. Stress causes emotional fatigue, short tempers, and relational problems. Stress is a very high emotional consumer, and love is an emotional commodity. And so when we're under stress, it is actually sapping our emotional capacity to relate to each other, and we have short tempers, we're just spent. Because of stress. And most stress is self-inflicted. Some isn't, but most is. Stress causes sickness and physical problems for adults and children. The number one reasons for doctor's office visits are stress. The number one reason for prescribed drugs in America is stress. And so God didn't make us to live in stress. God made us to live in peace. And He won't give us the grace to live under that kind of stress for very long. And here's a saying that I like. If the devil can't get in front of you and stop you, he'll get behind you and push you too fast. Right? And stress is an epidemic in our society, and we're seeing all of the hallmarks of that. So the answer to stress, first of all, is pray together about everything and pray before making decisions. Listen to this scripture, Philippians 4. Be anxious for nothing. And that's, listen, it's a choice. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ. Listen, don't be anxious for anything, but in everything pray. Did you know you can either pray or worry? And if you don't pray, you're going to worry? You know, you say, well, how do I develop a prayer list? Write down everything you're worried about and pray until you get peace. Your worry list is your prayer list. What are you worried about? That's your prayer list. And it says, don't be anxious for anything, but in everything with prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. What do you mean with thanksgiving? I'm thanking Him that He hears my prayers. He's going to answer every single one of them. I'm thanking you in advance that you're a loving daddy and you care about me and I'm not stranded here on this earth by myself. Why would I not pray when I've got the most loving being in the world wanting to be on my side helping me out? Okay, so don't be anxious. Don't be anxious for one single thing. But in everything, with prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God that passes all comprehension, you don't know why you have so much peace, it's just supernatural, will guard your heart and mind. The word guard there is the Greek word phrureo. It means a military guard to guard against an invasion of enemy forces. The devil can't penetrate God's peace. It's impenetrable. So when a married couple holds hands and you pray before you make decisions, pray about financial needs, pray about the things that you're going through. Karen and I, when the kids were old enough to stay by themselves in the house, we walked together for 20 years or so. Every morning for about 20 years, we walked together for an hour and a half. And we talked for 45 minutes and prayed together for 45 minutes every morning for many years. And all the obstacles that we were facing. And the Bible says if two on earth would agree together as touching anything they would ask, God would do it for them. That means a married couple has that ability. And Karen and I over and over prayed and agreed together about our children, about our lives, about everything in our lives. And God answered every single prayer. Now you're going to worry or you're going to pray. And when you pray, nothing bonds a couple together like prayer. And I was embarrassed to pray around Karen because I didn't know how to pray. Before I got saved, I cussed a lot, and I was afraid I'd start cussing or something. So I just didn't know. But now I'm a professional. But you need to pray with your wives. And as couples, you need to pray together. And just downsize your lives. If you have too much going on in your lives, downsize. Don't believe that more is better. Less is better when there's no stress with it. You know, the devil wants you to overload the plane so you can't manage it and it'll begin to crash. Number five, this is the last one. Have a current flight plan. Where are you going? You know, the most important thing you know is where you're going. And to have waypoints. So when I'm flying, when I did my solos, when I first started flying, I had to, you know, visual flight. And you have waypoints. You know where you're going. You know what your destination is. But you have waypoints. It's like a lake or a road or a river or a mountain or something. And what it does is your destination is obvious. You say, well, I'm flying to this airport. Okay. Well, how do you know you're getting there? Waypoints. There's the lake. I know I'm getting there because there's that lake. There's that road. You know, there's that river, there's that mountain, and so waypoints. And what I'm saying is you need to have a vision for your marriage. You need to know where you're going. You need to pray and ask God why he puts you together. And you need to have waypoints. Karen and I, last year we had a vision retreat. We talked about our finances and we said, well, where do we want to be, you know, in 5 years? Where are we going to go financially? And we had a plan, but we had waypoints. And one of our waypoints was something that happened 2 months ago. And we said, here's where we want to be financially in planning for our future. And a couple of months ago, we got a bank statement, and I walked over to Karen, showed her the bank statement. I just pointed to the number that was there on the bank statement, and I said, that's what we prayed about. We know where we're going, and we have a plan to get there, and we have waypoints with our children and grandchildren. We have waypoints in our relationship of where we want to grow and where we want to go. I want you to fly high in your marriage for the rest of your lives, and I want you to teach your children how to fly. You could crash. No one's the exception, but you don't have to crash because God has established laws that absolutely, totally, 100% protect our marriage and everything on board in our marriage. I want you to refuel the plane. Don't want you to overload it. Because it endangers the flight. I want you to have a plan. I want you to pray, have a vision retreat, and have a plan for your marriage.
This concludes session one. Please continue with the seven elements of emotional healing and health, the next teaching in this series.